Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse, great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices, changing the mood of food.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news without Willem van Denderen shortly. Willem is living the dream travelling Europe. I think he's having breakfast in Paris as we speak and getting his paperwork organised for the upcoming Euros. But of course, our former ITN journo turned pundit Derek Dyson will be joining us throughout the show. But first up, the A-League Women's Grand Final is this weekend at Amy Park in Melbourne, where the Premier's Melbourne City host Sydney FC. And while the Sky Blues have the wood on City when it comes to Premiership titles 4-2, they share the bragging rights for most Grand Final victories with 4 apiece. And while Sydney have infamously lost 6 championship deciders in their golden run of the last decade or so, the citizens of the Southern Capital have never lost a decider in what has become our very own box-to-box tradition. A friend of the show, Stephanie Brantz, joins us to break down what we all hope will be a thriller. And on the other side of the world, as the European titles are being decided, a few are already done and dusted. PSG has League One in the bag, Leverkusen the Bundesliga, and this past week, Inter beat their cross-city rivals AC Milan to win the Serie A Scudetto with a leg in the air. We'll be joined by our mate from that very city, Adriano Del Monte, to catch up on the latest in Italy, both the league title and, of course, ahead to the Azzurri's Euro title defence, less than 2 months away. Edge, grand final time in the A-League Women's. I do want to ask Steph about her feelings on this grand final in the first season post the Women's World Cup, but it feels like the two best sides are going to duke it out.
Absolutely. The table doesn't lie, and the Premiers, Melbourne City, are going to host a big grand final against Sydney FC, who didn't have it all the way against Central Coast, but they got there, and that's the 7th grand final in a row. Ante Juric, who's had to rebuild the team this year, so congratulations to them. I'm looking forward to it. And the other big news that you didn't mention, Rob, is that PSG, they won the title. I want to ask Derek a question off the top. Is the French league the easiest league to win? They're 12 points clear of Monaco, and they're still in the hunt for the treble. They're obviously in the Champions League and they're in the final of the French Cup as well. Is PSG just the easiest competition to win in terms of European football?
Before you answer that question, Derek, I will forgive him for not listening to my opener where I did mention PSG, but over to you.
Yeah, well, PSG certainly have had it all their own way. So, you know, I don't think there is a longer winning run in European football than PSG's run at that title. Did they slip up once relatively recently? Yes. Against Lille? It was a question without notice. But in the main, their economic firepower is so big with the money from Qatar, and they just seem to suck all the players towards them from, you know, the other so-called powerhouses like Monaco and Lyon, etc. So to answer your question, Edge, directly, yes, I think it probably is. I mean, it is the definition of a one-team league at the moment, and very difficult to change that situation because the other clubs just can't get any richer, can they?
That's right. It's their 12th title. Interestingly, they're too clear of Saint-Étienne, who's won 10, and Marseille 10. So, yeah, let's hope French football can get a bit more competitive in years to come.
Yeah, and Lille won that 2021 title. And in the second year of our podcast, after they'd won 4 in a row prior to that, there was a certain Kylian Mbappe, or Mbappe as others refer to him, playing for Monaco in 2016-17 before he moved to bigger things as a young teenager.
Yeah, sorry for not listening to your opener, Rob.
Oh, Edge, I'm just absolutely distraught that you don't pay attention to every word that I utter. All right, well, start paying attention to this. Willem has, even though he's in Paris, prepared the news bulletin for us. I mentioned the Melbourne City Sydney FC Grand Final this Saturday at Amy Park. It's a record-breaking 5th championship on offer for both sides. So they've won 4 apiece, as we mentioned off the top. City enters the match in stirring form after a 6-0 aggregate victory over Newcastle through 6 different scorers. While for Sydney, it was Mackenzie Hawksby who scored in both leagues to see them past Central Coast 2-1.
Peter Sabini has done really well there. Dos Santos, first time ball in. It's fallen to Mackenzie Hawksby. The heartbeat the engine room, the ultimate competitor. She finds the back of the net for her fifth goal of the season and surely one of her most important yet.
And this will be Sydney's seventh consecutive grand final appearance, as you already mentioned, Edge, all under the management of Ante Juric, one of the great streaks in Australian sporting history. So, look, it goes on and it will continue to go on. It doesn't look like there's any sign that he's intending to leave. And Sydney FC are a powerhouse. We talked about PSG as powerhouses. It'll take a while for them to get near them. But this is a great era that, well, it's in the making and the story will continue, but it feels like they do need to win a couple more of these grand finals just to frank that greatness edge.
Well, yeah, I think this one's going to be tough for them to win. I think City probably will edge them for favouritism just a little bit, only because of their form they've showed in the last 6 weeks. But Ante Juric and Sydney, I see, what a partnership. And I mean, he can stay there as long as he wants. He could be there for another 10 years. Oh, look, I just think he's done this year in particular, rebuilding the team after some, you know, significant transfers out of the club. He's done exceptionally well. And just a little of a personal shout out to Teo Pelizzeri, who's going to be calling the grand final on the weekend. He's really a wonderful voice in the women's game, and he deserves that. So, Teo, from me to you, enjoy the grand final and call well.
Yeah, no, Teo is an absolute ripper of a caller and a world-class broadcaster of football at any level, let alone our A-League's women's competition. Okay, we'll wrap it up there. We're going to talk a lot more to Steph Brantz about that after the break. So, to the men's game, the Mariners side enter Wednesday's final game of the regular season, a point behind Wellington. They need to beat or draw with Adelaide to lift the Premier's plate. You'd think that they should be able to do that. Adelaide's dropped off that very good early season form they've had and been pretty inconsistent throughout the rest of the season. But the Phoenix's 3-0 weekend win over MacArthur means that they pushed the Mariners all the way since that speed wobble a couple of weeks back in their pursuit of maiden silverware, while the Gosford Club are chasing their first premiership since 2011-12. Mariners will then head to Oman for the final of the AFC Cup next Sunday, where they'll play Al Ahed of Lebanon, Edge.
Yeah, I believe that's the team that Hezbollah supports. So it'll be interesting. Not that I'm joking about that just quietly, but they are significantly that sort of club. But it's going to be an incredible match. And the Laurie McKenna Express is well and truly on. You can get on board the Laurie McKenna Express and go to Oman and support the Mariners in what's going to be a historic AFC Cup final.
Okay, so if someone wants to do that, they just jump on the GGA website?
Yeah, they just email the GG Army at admin@ggarmy.com and you'll get all the information, and you have to be quick. Bookings close Wednesday because the program's on Sunday. But, yeah, no, there's quite a few Central Coast Mariners fans on board already. And, yeah, it'll be a fantastic trip to Oman and a really great occasion for Australian club football.
Okay, get on board. Now, Derek, I know I'm always sort of scanning the BBC website, BBC Sport, The Times, and wherever else I can sort of get my football diet filled up. But you were the first person that mentioned Arne Slot as a potential manager. I know he was talked about as the Tottenham Hotspur manager, which obviously Ange Postecoglou eventually got. But it looks like Liverpool are set to confirm him as the replacement for Jurgen Klopp, having agreed a 7.7 million euro or 12 million Australian dollar deal with Feyenoord. Slot spent his entire career in the Netherlands before spells in management at AZ Alkmaar and Cambuur. He joined Feyenoord in 2021, leading them to the 22-23 Eredivisie title, and last week added the Dutch Cup. Jurgen Klopp has been hands-off in the club's pursuit of his replacement, but has approved the Dutchman. Now, let's just listen to this before we get your feedback, Derek.
So I don't know anything about it. Not involved in the process, just to clarify that, club-wise, I mean. But I like a lot about it at the first moment, that if he is the one that he wants to take the job, really, and he's desperate, but come on, let's go for it, excited, rather. I like the way his team play football. I can say that definitely all the things I hear about him as a guy, good guy. Some people I know him. I don't know him yet, but good coach, good guy. Looking forward for the club if he's the solution.
Derek?
Yeah, well, I think people have had to do their homework on Slot, because despite the fact that he was in line for some Premier League jobs last season, of course, he was Tottenham's number one choice, and then once Slot ruled himself out to stay with Feyenoord, that's how Ange, of course, got the job, and how different things might have been then. But one thing I'm going to ask Henry Winter about in stoppage time later in the week is about, I suppose, the dearth of high-profile managerial talent currently available globally. And that's not to denigrate Slot or any of the other candidates. But I think, you know, I think Liverpool have had to jump here because there aren't that many options, and there are plenty of clubs looking for managers, or certainly could be looking for managers in the case of Manchester United. Barcelona, it's so bad with them that even though they were going to dispense with Xavi, he's now staying on for another year. And Bayern are looking at Ranić, of all people, to take their job, which I think says a lot about the managerial transfer market. Of course, Xabi Alonso was going to be their first choice, probably many first choices. It would have been the perfect fit. But they've had to dip down into a sort of a lower league, a secondary league. Slot's done an excellent job with absolutely zero resources at Feyenoord. Make no mistake. I mean, Ajax are often seen as a bit of a pygmy in European terms compared to the Premier League. But they've got, you know, 5-6 times more money than Feyenoord do to recruit. So he's obviously done an excellent job there and overperformed. But, you know, this is a real risk for Liverpool. And to be honest with you, everything was a risk because there isn't a handmade manager waiting to go. A couple of years ago, it could have been Gerrard. How different it could have been if he hadn't taken that Villa job, stayed in Rangers, won a couple more titles. Maybe we'd be talking about Stevie G. Yeah. But yeah, there's just not the production line, Rob. So they've had to take a punt. A lot of people will be looking at the similarities with Ten Hag, not just the follicle challenges that they both seem to have. But we've just got to look at him in his own merit, and it'll be interesting to see what he does.
Well, can he keep a cranky Mo Salah, who seemed to act in what I thought was a pretty unprofessional manner on the sideline with his manager? That sort of behaviour looks pretty ordinary.
I think he's done at Liverpool, Salah. I think the jungle drums were loud from Saudi. They obviously managed to convince him to stay over Christmas. But since that hamstring injury, he hasn't come back. You know, he's still the top goal scorer for the club, but he hasn't come back the same. He's been very tetchy on the sidelines. He's been whinging and he's been substituted. Hasn't started the last few games. Obviously made his comment walking through the mid zone at the weekend saying that there would be fire if he decided to speak. I think he's done. And to be honest with you, from a Liverpool point of view, you know, he's the wrong side of 30 now. Probably his peak years have gone, and maybe time to cash in the Saudi money and use that money to rebuild the team.
Yeah, no, it feels like it is time, and he'll always be remembered as a legend and a hero. But I think Virgil van Dijk was having an oblique pop at him last week. But before we move on from the Premier League, I don't want to get into Socceroos and Matilda Central, but I'm going to just give you an edge, a nice little one outside off. It's Monday evening as we record. We woke up, you and I, Monday night. Edge was asking if anybody was watching the game on the chat, and Adam sitting there grinning like the Cheshire Cat over there as Arsenal got a bit nervous towards the end there, but you got the job done at Spurs 3-2. Meanwhile, City, you know, it wasn't all their own way at the City ground, but they stayed in the obvious box seat if they keep on winning. So are you the favourites, or are you going to lose by a point? Oh, Michael's got his hand up, the way that Liverpool went so close a couple of seasons ago.
It's Manchester City's. It's in their own destiny. They just win. If they win all the games remaining, they take out the championship, and you know they would be favourites. But Arsenal on the weekend were very good. Tottenham's two goals came from errors, a brain explosion by the goalkeeper at one point, and Declan Rice's foul in the side of the penalty area. So I thought, even though it was tight in the last, you know, 10 minutes, I thought Arsenal weren't troubled too greatly by Tottenham.
Well, Mickey van der Ven's no goal looked like it was a toenail in it, and it could have been very different if that had gone in or been allowed.
Oh, yeah.
Derek, comment, please.
Yeah, if some buts. Like, I'm very, like, I'm going to sound really corny. I'm really proud of the team. They're really proud of the way that they've played this season. They've been virtually impeccable since Christmas. Lost one game in the league since the turn of the year. Drawn one away at Manchester City. Won all the rest. We don't win the league. You know, it's by the fine margins and the high standards that are now being set by Manchester City and as they continue to. So I've got no issues with the way our season has gone. We have had a fantastic season. We're the top scorers in the league. We've got the best defence in the league, therefore the best goal difference. Won more games than anybody else. Mm. We lose by a point, it will be disappointing. And I did debate with some of my Arsenal friends that is this, you know, this could be one of the best Arsenal teams ever. And yet teams are measured on success. And if they don't get success, then are they a great team? I still think they're a great team. And when I think about what I watched in the, particularly in the 2000s, prior to moving to Australia, you know, in the like 20 years since the Invincible season, you know, think of some of the teams that we had to put out and some of the stuff that's happened. It's just a pleasure to watch them at the moment, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, no, if I'm going to be honest, that they're a nice side to watch play football, and that moment very, very late where I think it was Gabriel just showed he had the bottle to hold the ball up as Sonny was willing it to go into the back of the net for the equaliser was very well done. And you did mention Henry Winter, and for those eagle-eared listeners who picked up on it, we're going to throw the format out the book for stoppage time, and Henry Winter, who's recently departed the Times, set up a new venture with Substack, which you've heard about with Jamie Jackson and Joey Lynch. We're going to talk to him a bit more about the Premier League and do a bit of a deeper dive later in the week. So make sure you listen to Stoppage Time later in the week. Now, Socceroos and Matilda Central for the Green and Gold Army. Now is the time to book your trip to France to see the Matildas. We're going to talk to Steph Brantz about that. Win that long, elusive, long-awaited Olympic medal matches against Germany, the USA and Zambia. You'll get to Marseille and Nice as well as Paris. Head to ggatravel.com.au. Now, Jackson Irvine's sixth goal of the season and third in his last four has sent St. Pauli top of the Bundesliga 2 with just three games to play. Jackson played a full match with Connor Metcalf, 85 minutes in their 1-0 win over Hansa Rostock. They can take another big step towards promotion to the German top flight this weekend when they play local rivals Hamburg SV. Things are still up in the air, though, in the championship. Mus Luongo and Cam Burgess heavily involved as Ipswich drew 3-3 with Hull City. Town trail leads on goal difference. As we know, Leicester City's already gone up, but have a game in hand heading into the final week before the playoffs. Alessandro Ciccatti remains a fixture for Parma Calcio in Italy, playing 90 minutes in their 4-0 win over Lecce. They remain on top of the Serie B by 5 points with three games to play. And Harry Kewell, Edge, my prediction is going to come true. He's going to manage the Socceroos one day. He will manage, in the meantime, Yokohama F. Marinos in the Asian Champions League final after they triumphed over Ulsan Hyundai in a thrilling second-round leg, went to penalty shootout. They were down to 10 men. It was a heroic effort, mate.
Certainly was, and Harry Kewell is fast. Yeah, he's fast eroding some of the doubts around his managerial stuff. His first couple of outings were pretty ordinary, but his time at Celtic, and he started brilliantly at Yokohama. Let's hope it continues.
Against Al Hilal, the Saudi champion. So that will be fascinating to watch. Now over to our ladies. Mary Fowler proved the difference for Manchester City as they defeated Bristol 4-0, opening the scoring on the hour with a long bomb that opened the floodgates.
Here is Fowler. Oh! Well, they needed something special. And Mary Fowler had found the all-important goal for Manchester City.
Fowler scored a second as City stayed top, now well into the business end of the season. If we're going to win that medal, Mary Fowler will be one of the heroes of that side. There's absolutely no doubt. Now in Spain, Hayley Russo was off the bench and onto the score sheet as Real Madrid came from behind to beat Levante. With five games, they sit second and remain an outside chance of the title. In the Women's Champions League, Ellie Carpenter and Lyon secured passage to the final, as they always seem to do, the feminine Lyon, after defeating Claire Hunt and PSG 5-3 on aggregate. They now meet Barcelona in the final. Okay, gentlemen, we're going to wrap it up there. We're going to talk to Steph Brantz. The A-League Women's Grand Final is this weekend at Amy Park. If you're listening and you haven't been to an A-League Women's match all season, and you're in Melbourne, or you can get to Melbourne, this is the game to go to. It's going to be an absolute cracker between two titans of the women's game in this country, Melbourne City and Sydney FC. So Steph Brands, expert. It's becoming a tradition, Edge, her grand final preview. It'd be great to have a chat to her in a minute.
Yeah, Steph knows her stuff. It'll be fun.
Excellent. Stick around. That's next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. And after last year's success of the FIFA Women's World Cup in Australia, there were so many hopes and expectations on the A-League women's competition this season. Would the crowds rise? Would the standard rise? And the answer, I think, to both of those is yes. We didn't see massive crowds, but we saw incremental growth in both crowds and interest and quality. And it seems that with the grand final this weekend, we've got the grand final that probably the competition deserved between Melbourne Sydney and Sydney FC. They've both won four grand finals apiece, and one of them is going to come out on top this weekend and be the current all-time leader. And to talk about the grand final, the lady that we've spoken to the last couple of grand final previews, is becoming a bit of a tradition on Box to Box, our good friend Stephanie Brantz. How are you, Steph?
I'm a one-hit wonder. You only bring me in for grand finals. How are you, guys?
Isn't that a testament to the way we esteem you, Steph?
I think glory girl is the word you're after.
Yeah, that's it. You are. Well, you're out and about in the shadows of Allianz Stadium in the wonderful inner city suburb of Paddington. You've stepped out of a very important meeting for us, Steph. So let me get into it. So do you agree, as much as we saw some, you know, excellent fast finishing performances by Newcastle and some great history created there and the Central Coast Mariners, that Melbourne City and Sydney FC, the past 5 or 6 years, this feels like a grand final that we needed to have, and it's been played at a proper football stadium, Amy Park.
Yeah, I think so. And to be honest, I've got a friend, the great Tom Samani, said the table really lies. He was telling me that when you've got Melbourne City finishing on 41, Sydney on 39, you've got two worthy contenders for the big dance, if you like. I'm glad it's being played in a proper football stadium, if you like, at Amy Park on the weekend. However, I've got to say, gents, I was at Sydney FC Mariners' second leg at Leichhardt Oval, and that was an atmosphere. I think it was perfectly situated for maximum eyeballs and attendances. The place was packed. I was sitting on the hill with some former Matildas, and the atmosphere is absolutely amazing, and I thought it just added so much to the occasion. So I really hope Amy Park gets filled, because this occasion deserves that sort of atmosphere.
Steph, it certainly does. And the New South Wales crowds, well, you know, last week Newcastle hosted Melbourne City, 6,000 people, 7,000 people for the game that you're at yesterday, Sydney and Central Coast. Is that what the legacy of the FIFA Women's World Cup is? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent. I've actually been a bit disappointed. I'm probably going to be one of the few people. I know crowds are up, I know eyeballs are up and all that sort of thing. I actually thought there'd be more of a knock-on effect, and I thought there would be bigger crowds turning up, but certainly the ones that have become aware of the players and the teams, and they've really engaged with the A-League women, that is definitely a knock-on effect from the FIFA Women's World Cup and the success and the eyeballs that it drew. Even when you look at things like Central Coast and how well they did in that first season back in the league, the fact that they are back in the league and we've got a growing league, that's really important. Emily Husband has been unbelievable as their coach, and kudos to her, and I'm pleased to see she'll play some sort of a role in the A-League Women's All-Stars team. But also Newcastle Jets, and it's a club that we know is struggling, and we've heard they're being sold about 14 times in the last 6 months, I think. However, it's really good to see that they could do such a good push through to the finals. And I think they had probably about 423 shots on goal, but unfortunately weren't able to score more than Melbourne City. But that's not a slight on their season. You know, they went for it, and the support that got behind them up in the Hunter, I think, was super important. And I don't think that would have existed without the Women's World Cup.
No, that's exactly right. Now, what about Sydney FC? They squeaked past Central Coast Mariners 2-1 on aggregate. Mackenzie Hawksby, she got both goals, one in the away leg and then one at the home leg. How good's Mackenzie?
Well, it was a bit squeaky bum time, wasn't it? Because Central Coast Mariners came at them hard, and we're talking against a team of, I want to say all-stars, but gents, I don't know if you remember, we spoke at the beginning of the season about what was going to happen to Sydney FC when they lost all those players, and particularly what was going to happen around the middle of the park. And they lost Sarah Hunter, Rachel Lowe, Madison Haley, Remy Simpson up front. And we were wondering who was going to be able to come in and tie them all together. Well, that certainly ended up being Mackenzie Hawksby. She's been an absolute gun, and both goals in their semi-final legs. And you know, she's going to take them. If they're going to win it, it's going to be her having an absolute blinder on the weekend.
Well, Ante Juric is the super coach. 5 premierships, 4 championships. It's his 7th grand final in a row. But I actually think this season has been his best coaching season, because he lost his captain early in the season, Nat Tobin, to that knee injury. And then he had a whole bunch of new players, young players out of the New South Wales NPL. And, you know, Matty Caspers, Indiana DeSantos, Abby Lemon, Talon Henneker. I mean, they all made their mark this year. I think he's done an awesome job to get into his 7th straight grand final and reinvent this team.
Oh, 100%. And every season you wonder whether he can do it again. And I think there were a few naysayers wondering what he would do when he lost so many players. But that laundry list of names that you've just read, he can spot talent. And we should remember that he spotted Hawksby as well when she was playing in the State League. And that was only a few years ago. So he really has an eye for talent. And he's crafted this team into a team that may not always be, and when you look at a Melbourne City, you are looking at a team that's been really strong, and they have beaten Sydney FC both times this season, if my recollection is correct. And he manages it to make them into a match-winning team, and I really think he can do it on the weekend.
Well, I think it's both teams have 3 prime movers in them in their lineups: Sydney, Mackenzie Hawksby, Jada Wyman, and obviously Courtney Vine. And Melbourne City, Rebecca Stott, over 100 caps for New Zealand. That's not bad. Wilkinson, even though she did play, she spent some time on the bench against Newcastle in the first leg. And Barbara, 69 caps for Brazil. I think she's been very important to Melbourne City when she's arrived. These 3 prime movers in each team, they're going to go head-to-head, aren't they? Those players, I expect the winning team will have one of those players as the player of the match.
100%. You would absolutely think so. And I mean, that's without even mentioning Letitia McKenna. And there's numerous other names as well. But you would think one of those 6 that you named would really be up there for best on the field, or the Women's Award, which I think will be handed out, won't it, at half time in this match. So, but certainly player of the grand final, that's going to be someone out of there. There's just so many impact players, if you like. And we actually saw, you mentioned Barbara, and I think she put off, she wasn't well, was she, in that second leg match? And we saw Barbieri come back onto the field, which was unexpected, perhaps, I think, a 4th appearance for this season. But the key players have been so important for both these sides. And when you look at City Blue against Sky Blue, it's difficult to pick between them. I don't know who you guys are tipping, but I find it really difficult. I think Sydney might just edge them.
Yeah, it's going to be it's one of those games. I think the home ground advantage is going to help. And City, they're in a good vein of form. 6 unbeaten matches. They're scoring goals for fun. And we talked about the Sydney youngsters, but the Melbourne City youngsters, they're pretty good too. Danielle Galic has had an incredible last month. And Shelby McMahon, the 15-year-old, is just stamping her her brand on the competition as well. So both teams have an incredible group of young players and experienced players. But Steph, you're going for Sydney. I'm going for Melbourne City.
When you mentioned Shelby McMahon, I just think 15 years old, I can't remember what I was doing at 15, but it certainly wasn't starring in a grand final in the elite women's sport competition of any kind. I will put my tip behind Sydney. I just think they're going to pull together at the right moment. I don't know if you remember the one against Melbourne Victory where they got done by a Kaita Kounikoros corner in the last seconds of the game. They will remember that. And I don't think they'll ever want anything like that to happen again. I think they're going to do it. So, yeah, let's not check in next week. But that's who my tip is.
Okay, just before I hand back to Rob Gilbert to ask you the final one, I'm going to ask you a couple of quick ones off the top of your head. Who's been the most improved team this year?
Do you know what? I'm going to say Central Coast Mariners, but it's probably not fair because they've come from not being in the league at all. But I think they've been the surprise packet. No one knew what to expect, but they've done it for me.
And the team that was the greatest disappointment?
Sitting bottom of the table, Adelaide United. Just from the years that we've seen them do some amazing things within the league, but 15 points from a season, yeah, I think they'll be looking to not just improve, but have a complete reset for next season.
So, Steph, we started off with the Women's World Cup last year where, as we record, 88 days out from the Paris Olympics. Apart from the obvious Courtney Vine, does Kaia Simon still feature in Tony Gustafsson's thinking, and are there any other bolters that you see in the A-League women's competition who might be making a case to be selected for the Olympics?
There's any number of players making a case. You mentioned a handful earlier. Kaia, it's a really tough one because we saw how influential she could be in that Mariners side, and she's certainly still got it. I don't think she'll be in the Olympics squad. I think there's probably a lot more players with a bit more football under their belt in the last 12 to 18 months who've made a claim for those spots. And we've seen how Sam Kerr being ruled out with injury has just opened the door for a number of other players to be trialled and have an opportunity. So unfortunately, and I love Kaia Simon, but I don't see her being a part of that Olympic side.
And, you know, with a very difficult group to get out of, Steph, are we heightening the expectations a little too much? I mean, most of us are thinking that we must leave Paris with a medal to call it a successful tournament and finally make that breakthrough. On the strength of some of that recent form against Mexico, convincing win. What's your expectations?
I think a semi-final finish would be fantastic. It's a hard group, but I think once you're out of the group, then you've ploughed through two really tough teams to get there. We have never excelled at the Olympics. And remember Tokyo, how disappointing that was, because I really felt like we could have actually been on the podium. I would like to see another semi-final finish. I think when people talk up their expectations, they forget that the rest of the world is actually really good at football. And certainly throughout Europe, and we know what the US is like, they're used to big tournament wins and stepping up when it matters. So I'd be really happy with a final four finish. Is that really downplaying it? Are you all disappointed with that?
I guess, you know, look, we're nothing if not a realist, Steph. And, you know, when you've got the likes of USA and Germany at the very least and a very strong contender from Africa as well I'll concede that the winner of the playoff between Zambia and Morocco, if it has been played, it's not on my radar. So if we get out of the group, I think we medal. I think that's the thing. I think we either get out of the group and medal, or because we'd have to be in excellent form to have done that, wouldn't we? Otherwise, we could be leading.
And look, we saw what happened to the USA in Tokyo, and it is those big moments. So if you get that far again, we saw it in the World Cup as well with Spain and England stepping up at the right time. That's what it's about.
Yeah. No. Exactly. All right, Steph. Well, look, we better let you get back into that very important meeting at the whichever hotel it is in Paddington that you're enjoying a Monday evening at, and enjoy the grand final wherever you're going to be watching it. I'll be getting out there. I don't think Ed will be able to get back from Bangkok in time, but it's about 10 minutes down the road from me, so I've got no excuses.
You're mocking me about the importance of my meeting, but it's always an absolute delight to chat to all. And enjoy the final. It's been a great season.
Yeah, good on you, Steph. And thanks again for joining us. We love having you on and really appreciate you making the time for us.
Anytime, guys.
Stephanie Brandt's one of the leading voices in football in this country, let alone women's football, and a great fun chat to have with her anytime she's on our podcast. Okay, stick around after the break. And a former Melbourne boy who now lives in the wonderful city of Milan. He was at the Derby della Madonnina at the San Siro last week to watch Inter win the Scudetto. He's going to go through that all with us and have a bit of a look ahead to the Euros and Italy's chances of defending the title they won at Wembley a couple of years ago. That's next on Box to Box. Hey, Edge. Thank you. You're all the way over there in Bangkok, but you still got to spoil your mum for Mother's Day, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. If I don't do that, I'm in all sorts of trouble.
Absolutely, of course. So better way is there for you to do it than jump online?
Yeah, I can go online and get it delivered to my brother and he can give it to her for me, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. So if you haven't already done that, spoil your mum at this Mother's Day with the big brand fragrance from Chemist Warehouse. There's Calvin Klein Euphoria, 30 mil for just $19.99. Sweet Like Candy by Ariana Grande, 30 mil, $29.99. I think that might be just a bit out of the demographic for your mum, Edge.
Yeah, she's currently swatting away on a cruise on the Mediterranean with my dad.
Very nice.
They're in their late 70s and early 80s, respectively. So you can imagine what they're doing. Yeah, she'll be having a glass of champagne. Life. The old man will have a nice European beer. Mm. They'll be having hors d'oeuvres on their balcony.
Oh, I'd love to do one of those river cruises one day.
Yeah, so what should I get my mum?
I would recommend a classy fragrance for a classy lady. Estee Lauder Beautiful. How's that, Edge? 30 mils. You don't even have to tell her you only paid $69.99. That'd go down well, would it?
Yeah. You don't tell your mum how much you spent.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're not going to tell her, but, no. You know, that sort of fragrance, you know, you can sort of big it up and you might even be able to buy a bottle of Dolce & Gabbana Light Blue 25 mil for $39.99 if you're feeling generous. Mm. And I'm sure you are because you love your mum.
I do.
Absolutely. And Elie Saab Le Parfum, 90 mils for $79.99, all class at Chemist Warehouse. Edge, the great savings, they're every single day, aren't they, mate?
They certainly are, Rob. Get down to Chemist Warehouse, or if you're like me, get online and send the gear to your brother to give to your mum.
Perfect. Chemist Warehouse, why
pay more? Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. We said off the top of the show that gradually the league titles are being ticked off. Obviously, the Premier League yet to be decided, but PSG have got Ligue 1 in their back pocket. Leverkusen have finally broken the drought in the Bundesliga, and in this past week, Inter beat their cross-city rivals AC Milan to win the Serie A Scudetto. Well, pretty much with a leg in the air, and the man we usually talk to about all matters Italian football, and we will get to the Azzurri and the upcoming Euros in a moment, is our good friend Adriano Del Monte in Milan, just finishing off his second espresso of the day. How are you, Adriano?
Very well, Rob. Great to speak to you guys as always.
Yeah, excellent, mate. And well, look, I guess I want to get straight to the point. It always seems at this time of year when clubs are sort of clearing out for that season, unsuccessful managers and looking around for other managers. Simone Inzaghi, you know, it doesn't always work that legendary players become managers. I mean, we just look at Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard as recent examples. The list could go on for as long as you like. But, you know, if you look at his progression at Lazio to taking this role, you know, just what difference has he really made to you know, what's already been a successful side? How do you rate him as a manager?
Look, he's right up there, and obviously Inter are very keen to keep hold of him. Obviously, some other clubs now, there are some rumours and reports of other clubs with vacancies looking to make an offer, make an approach for Simone Inzaghi. But I can tell you the very, very latest reports here that Inter are certain to make a big contract extension and offer to him. So, look, I don't think this chapter of his career will end anytime soon. And why should it? It's incredible what he's been able to do with this team, of course, an Inter Milan team who, let's look back over the course of the last 10, 15 years, a lot of difficult moments, not so much consistency, particularly in the 2010s after that treble win. Back in 2010, it was a really difficult period for Inter Milan, but they came through, obviously won another Scudetto with Conte, And now Inzaghi's come in and, look, continue to build on what Conte, also Spalletti before him, had started to build at that club. And Simone Inzaghi, a very calm individual, brings that presence into the dressing room, knows how to get the best out of top-tier talent. And the reward of being, well, look, undoubtedly one of the best teams in Europe this season. I take great regret for Inter and their fans this season from the Champions League run. I think there was a Champions League there to be won for this team this season. They're as good as any club in Europe. And personally, I had only City rated higher than them. And with City now out, it was a massive opportunity. But not to be, but look, on the domestic front, a long way clear at the top of Italian football. And yeah, I was there at the derby, the way that they won it, and just all of the drama and history around that made it all the more special for Inter Milan fans. So, look, I've been living here in Milan now for 5 years, and that's five different winners every year. Obviously, Inter won it twice in that period, but it's great to see the competition at the top of Italian football, and Inzaghi and Inter are already, I think, will be very hard to stop come next season.
Yeah, and every country with a football pedigree has its own celebrations. I've seen on our family chat, my wife, whose family live up in the north near Treviso, just outside of Venice, for those who don't know, back in 1991 when they won the UEFA Cup, my cousin-in-laws piled me in the back of the car with their Inter flags out the window, driving at a million miles an hour and doing laps around the Duomo and the cathedral, for those not familiar. They really do go off. Insofar as Inzaghi, just to wrap the point up there, potential for work abroad in the Premier League. Does he speak English well? It shouldn't be, but it seems to be a prerequisite to success in the Premier League.
Yeah, we don't have the strongest English speakers in Italy, so his English, look, certainly not anywhere near a native level. As I said, the very, very latest word here on the ground in Milan is that Inzaghi will definitely be offered a significant extension here, and the word is that he will stay. And again, I think a project that he has built at Inter and where they're going, they are capable next season of challenging for absolutely everything. Despite the elimination to Atletico in the Champions League, I don't think there's any club over a two-legged tie that they would fear. We know Mbappe, Real Madrid next season is going to be a handful for everyone, given where they're currently at. But this is an Inter team who I think, look, if he were to make a move to Liverpool tomorrow, which it won't happen, the final boss looks certain to be going to Liverpool. But if he were to make that move, you're essentially starting again at that level. I think what he's done is he's on the cusp of absolute greatness here and potentially building a dynasty. Look, I have hope for the other Italian clubs, but I think this Inter team, I think they've been the best club the last three seasons. They only have the one Scudetto to show for it, but this is something potentially special that is brewing, and I think he would be not a madman to leave, but I think it would be the wrong move at this stage for Inzaghi to part ways with Inter. I think there'll be many opportunities to come in the future if he can continue this great run of form.
Well, the competition in Serie A, such as it was, came from Milan and Juve, but they didn't put up that much resistance. So it's typified by the 0-0 that they had themselves and shared the point over the weekend. What do those teams need to do to get to get closer to Inter? Is it manager? Is it personnel? Can they not do it just because Inter have got that economic power that just makes it very difficult for them to be matched in Serie A at the moment?
The answer in short, Derek, is that it's a bit of everything. I think they're both, well, we've seen on the pitch, they're miles off the consistency of Inter this season. Inter have really had the core of this squad that they've built. They've strengthened as seasons have gone by. It's funny, the last two matches I've worked at were the derby, Milan-Inter, when Inter won the Scudetto, and then Juventus-Milan. And they're very different games. Juve, Milan, 0-0. Look, both teams who need to get back in the Champions League. Of course, Milan were eliminated in the group stage this season. Juventus weren't in Europe altogether. It's two teams that desperately need to be playing at the highest level and going deep in that competition. I think Juventus, starting with them, I think they've gone away from their identity. I think they've lost their identity in recent seasons. There's no doubt there'll be a managerial change at the end of the campaign. The word here is Thiago Motta is all but confirmed internally to take over from Massimiliano Allegri. And that's a change for me that I think's been a long time coming. There's just a need for a spark on the bench. And with that, there's a lot of quality in that Juventus squad, but there are a lot of players at the present time under the current manager, not really performing at their highest level. I've interviewed a lot of the Juventus players, and really without them saying it, it's been quite clear that they're not overly content with their role and the direction of the club on pitch at this point in time. Off the pitch, Juventus are still running smoothly, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the pitch to I guess, align with the good work they're doing off it. For Milan, look, it's a bit the same. They've been a club that have, of course, 12 months ago, they were in a semi-final of the Champions League. It's not all doom and gloom for Milan, but very similarly, they're in a position where they do have a couple of players that have either finished or are close to moving on. Olivier Giroud will move to Los Angeles at the end of the season. He's been integral to their growth and success despite his age in the last couple of seasons. Stefano Pioli, the manager, who, look, I really think he maximised his potential at this club. He did amazing things, but he too now is getting to a point where it looks very, very likely he will move on at the end of the season. But then the question begs for Milan, who comes in? A lot of Milan fans here want Antonio Conte, despite his links to Juventus and Inter. Who will be the right man to come in and really, again, re-energise and provide that spark for this squad as well? So, look, I think it's not all doom and gloom for both, but a lot of changes need to be made, and they need to make the right changes in order to maintain the pace with a club who, on pitch, are as complete as this Inter squad are at the present time.
You mentioned Thiago Motta before, and of course he's plying his trade at Bologna, and I wondered whether you'd give our listeners a bit of a sense of them. They're not a fancy team by any means. I nearly collapsed when I saw that their captain was Scottish, Liam Ferguson, and I was thinking to myself, who's this guy? So maybe tell us about the job that Motta has done, and how Bologna have managed to sort of break through Roma and Napoli and people like that to get to fourth.
It has been, for me, it's one of the best stories in Europe this season. A team like Bologna, Bologna are a mid-table team historically at best. They have had some moments in their history, but certainly in the current era we're in, it's a team that have been a solid mid-table Serie A team. And Thiago Motta has come in, previous experiences as a manager. He started at Paris Saint-Germain in their youth team, and then took a role at Genoa, went to Spezia, and now he's taken this role at Bologna and really flourished with some really important players in the squad. Ferguson, you mentioned, there's Zesi, who's come in with a great experience at Bayern Munich. And a lot of quality of players who've had some experience at top clubs in Italy, but he's been able to really mould his style of play with not so much pressure on a team that have really flourished. It's a really strong possession-based style where from all reports, from all players I've spoken to at the club, what they love about him the most is that he's really adaptable he's a really intelligent manager, and he's not fixed in one style of play, and as such he's really brought out the best in some of his players who've really bought into his system and his philosophies. It was very famous when he was at Paris Saint-Germain in the youth team. He was playing with two defenders and a sort of a 2-6-1 style formation. And look, he's really modernising the approach, I guess, to Italian football. As such, this is a team now, given the fact that Italy will have five clubs in next season's UEFA Champions League. Quite incredibly, Bologna are almost certain to be one of those five. And it's a remarkable story. Unfortunately, it does look like it will end this season, though, because, again, my word is that he will certainly be the coach of Juventus in a few months' time and may take a couple of his top players with him, which means Bologna next season Champions League, 8 group stage fixtures due to the expanded format. It may be a tough season for them, but nevertheless, what he's done for this beautiful city and this big, big club is tremendous. And look, I think it's a story that will become more known as they embark on a Champions League campaign in a few months' time, which will be remarkable. But certainly one to keep an eye on. They still need a few points to secure the spot, but the fact that they're up there battling with the likes of Juventus and Milan still for second place is extraordinary.
And one final one from me there. I wanted to ask about Roma, because you mentioned the fact that Inter were disappointed to go out of the Champions League and end their European interest. But of course, Roma are facing down a semi-final versus Leverkusen, of all people. Of course, they have got rid of Mourinho part of the way through the season. Club legend Daniel De Rossi has taken over and seems to have acquitted himself fairly well to keep them in fifth in Serie A and in this Europa League run. They're feeling confident that they can do what virtually nobody has done this season and beat Bayer Leverkusen?
Look, they will be. There's no doubt about that. They were beaten by Thiago Motta's Bologna earlier in the week, but this is a team in Roma who there's something different. If you ever come to Italian football matches and you go to the Stadio Olimpico when Roma play, there is something different about the energy inside that stadium. And on big European nights or in big domestic fixtures, there's something else about this match. Now, call me crazy, I'm not sure, but Leverkusen, look, they won the title. They've been amazing to watch. They've been the story of the season. There's no doubt about that. But Leverkusen, there is the feeling here they have to lose at some point. They've been pulling off a lot of 97th, 96th minute equalizers or late winners. I get the feeling, I don't know if in the tie, but I really am confident that De Rossi's Roma can do what no club has done this season and win the first leg. I've predicted a 2-1 for this match. I think they have the quality, but it's that 12th man in the stands at the Olimpico, which is just something else. It's something you cannot really put into words. What De Rossi has been able to do, what he has been able to bring to this team, is a true understanding of what it means to be a player of AS Roma. Roma, yes, one of the biggest clubs in Italy, haven't had too much success, but those that are from Rome need to play for this club. And as I said, it's something different to everywhere else I've travelled to in Italy. Everyone has their own unique tweaks and what it means to be from this city, from this club. But Roma is just something else. And De Rossi bringing that to this team, reinvigorating this team, unleashing some of his key players who were really restricted in the latter stages of Mourinho's tenure, has seen just some minor changes bring out the absolute best in what is a very, very good squad on paper. That's something we cannot disregard about this Roma team. So, look, they have dreams of winning the Europa League. They have dreams of playing Champions League football next season. And De Rossi, for this point in time, is he the man for the long, long-term future? Time will tell. The club will commit to him. But I think in this moment, in this period where things weren't going their way at all, I think it's a refreshing face, mind, Roma person through and through that has really brought out the best in this team. And that's why I give them every chance of doing what no club has done this season, this week, and beating Leverkusen.
Well, that would be fascinating if they managed to stop the German juggernaut, who just seemed to find ways to keep that unbeaten streak alive. So that's a game to watch. What will be also worth watching is the Euros not too far away now. 3 years ago, we were watching the delayed Euros in Wembley. I remember watching your just ecstatic reaction as you watched the finals and commentated on it. I was down here in Melbourne at Cafe Notturno. Sadly, the much lamented Cafe Notturno, which for anyone else around Australia was the go-to place to watch football for anyone connected to Italians. And at this time last year, Luciano Spalletti was lifting the Scudetto with Napoli. Now all the pressure is on him to do something with this this defence of the Euros. A pretty tricky group: Spain, Croatia, and certainly no easy beats, Albania. They're going to do well just to get out of the group, let alone defend their title.
Look, it's you never know what to make of an Italy squad going into a tournament, especially in this form. I think on paper it's not the strength of the Italian squad 3 years ago. But then again, 3 years ago, I don't think anyone were really tipping Italy to go all the way and win it. Italy in tournaments, anything is possible. And if you've covered or if you followed Italian football for a long time, you know that typically in the group stage of tournaments, they just do enough to get through and they start to grow and build into tournaments. I'm very confident that if this team can get out of the group, Spain, Croatia, Albania, no easy match there. But if they can get out of the group, anything is possible. I do fear for where the goals will come from an Italian perspective. Defensively in the Euros 3 years ago, they were so complete. Obviously, the Bonucci, Chiellini playing at their absolute best in the very latter years of their careers. This time around, defensively, perhaps not the same strength, although we will have a lot of interplayers who will feature that have been so successful at club level. So hopefully that can translate to the national team. But again, as I go through every line, I just feel not as strong as it were a few years ago. In attack, where will the goals come from? So with limited options, but again, as I said, when that blue shirt takes to the field in a tournament, really anything is possible. And that's sort of all I can bank it on at this point, because there's a bit of pessimism here, if I can say. There's not so much optimism that the title can be capture it again and win the third European crown. But it's always exciting, of course, for Italian fans after missing the last two World Cups, obviously with that Euros sandwich in the middle. But it's refreshing to see the national team back into another big tournament. And, of course, in Germany, where the national team have had great success, cast your mind back to 2006. So, look, it's exciting nevertheless. It's the peak of many of these players' careers playing for their national team at tournaments, and we'll see what happens. But I go in with some reservations, and I think, you know, obviously a lot of focus on that opening game in Dortmund against Albania, and we'll get a good read of where they're at going in.
Adriano, you wouldn't be Italian if you didn't go in with some reservations. I mean, every Italian I know not only think the glass is half empty, but that someone has poisoned the half glass. So, you know, that's just classic Italian expectation, isn't it, mate? So,
for sure.
But when it goes off and the title, you know, unexpectedly, like it did last time, it comes through, especially against a nation like England, which has been through, as is well documented, so much pain for Italy. You know, the occasional missing of a tournament or underperforming is probably accepted with a little bit more sang-froid than it otherwise would be if the Italians can muster up any of that, for that matter. Hey, mate, look, we better let you go. Thanks again for coming on. As we get closer to those Euros, we will be reaching out to get your vibe on what's happening. Obviously, you'll be in Germany for it, mate, so can't wait to talk to you a bit more about it then.
Pleasure as always, guys. Always good to chat. Keep up the great work.
Excellent, Adriano Del Monte. You'll find him on Optus Sports, ESPN. You'll find him just about anywhere where there is good sport, living the dream in Milan and watching football with his beloved Azzurri heading to the Euro soon. Okay, stick around. World Cup Corner next on Box to Box. We're going to talk some Champions League football.
Willa, willa, willa. Everybody's going to buy Hoyts Spices. Everyone's going to save a dollar or two. Everybody's going to buy
Hoyts Spices. Everybody's going to save a dollar or two.
Okay, so who would know that was not the original jingle, as Michael Edgley's joining in the background there. Hey, you both know that I took the week off last week, and I was spending time with our good mate Johnny Accardo from Hoyts. We had a wonderful time with our friends from Ace Radio. So if you don't know, Ace Radio is a tremendous family-owned radio network up and down the eastern seaboard of Australia, regional Victoria as well, and host our podcast on all their apps and so on. But we had some wonderful food with lots of Hoyts spices in it, Edge.
Fantastic. What did you have, Rob?
Well, we went for some Chinese. And, you know, do you know that even the Chinese, they have their own spice profile with Chinese Fire Spice, of course.
Chinese Fire Spice.
Star Anise.
Use it all the time.
Things. Exactly. And that's what you can get at Hoyts if you want to make some Chinese at home. In fact, I'm going to do that this weekend, and I'm going to make a beautiful stir fry with all of those ingredients in it. Derek, do you ever make Chinese at home at the Hillsville Sanctuary?
Occasionally we'll do a sweet and sour, Rob. So what can I do with that with Hoyts?
Well, yeah, well, your sweet and sour, it's, you know, typically not strong on the spice range there. But, you know, you could add
I think you put the five spice in there, don't you?
Yeah, that's it. You could not quite render the chicken, but that flavour does come in there when you're marinating it as well. And a bit of chili on it afterwards. I put chili on anything, regardless of what it is. So if you want to just improve the flavour of your food, you know where to go. Coles, Woolworths, or good independent supermarkets. Fill your empty spice jars with Hoyts value packs, and you will be happy with Hoyts, that's for sure.
Fill those empties with Hoyts spices, yeah.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyts Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. We hope you've enjoyed listening to the show so far. It was great chatting to Steph Brantz about the A-League Women's Grand Final earlier. And, of course, our good friend Adriano Del Monte. Don't you just wish you were over there in Milan as he's sipping in his espresso, about to head off to the style capital of the world and just living the dream, Edge.
Summer's on the way. It'll just be beautiful. He'll be having a nice little espresso. He's probably booked into a lovely restaurant to have some risotto, the saffron risotto in Milan, which is...
See, you do know your stuff. You are. And who said you weren't well-travelled? The best-travelled bloke I know, short of a Qantas 747 pilot. Okay, the Champions League, it is... at the sharp end, there are no Premier League sides in the semi-finals, which, you know, is a bit of a shock, a bit of a jolt, I think. Who was it, Derek, from one of the Bayern players that said, thanks to the farmers, and you might give us a bit of a description of why he said that as well, because I think you have been accused of using that term in the past.
Yeah, maybe not for the Bundesliga. Maybe we spoke about the French league a little earlier, but that was Mats Hummels of Borussia Dortmund, of course, one of the semi-final clubs that we're going to talk about. And probably the biggest thing with that is that everyone's been talking all season about the Premier League getting this so-called coveted fifth Champions League place. But that's not going to happen now. That Arsenal, Manchester City, and then a couple of the defeats.
Well, we heard Adriano say that Italy has got it. And,
quite right. We'll only be top four. And that affects Villa and Tottenham and some of those teams that are going for it. So, that will be. I'm actually looking forward to these because I can just relax. I don't have a horse in the race, and I think it's wide open.
So we'll start off with that game that you mentioned, which is the later of the two, Dortmund at home to PSG in the first leg of that match, and then the other German side who are trying to salvage something from this season, Bayern Munich against Real. Again, both these matches in Germany, the first legs. How do you see these play out?
Oh, look, I can't see how Real Madrid don't beat Bayern Munich. I mean, Bayern have sort of bucked the trends by getting this far. They weren't fancied against Arsenal. They've had a miserable Bundesliga season. Tuchel seems to be wanting to make a point as he exits the departure lounge. Some talk actually with around Bayern fans trying to get him to stay, which again just shows you what lack of options there are in the market. But I think Real Madrid are just too powerful for them. And then the other one I think is more of a lottery. Borussia Dortmund are really the surprise package. You'd think that Paris Saint-Germain on paper are the favourites because of Kylian Mbappe and some of their firepower, but I've just got a feeling that Dortmund might just buck the trends there, and it could be a Real Madrid-Dortmund final.
An edge, when you look at that, the Real Madrid lineup with, the likes of Vinicius Junior, Jude Bellingham, Rodrigo, Toni Kroos still playing incredible form, Antonio Rudiger, Dani Carvajal, Nacho, and then, just the small matter of a bench with a bloke called Luka Modric, who is evergreen. Admittedly, he missed his penalty, but, a rare misstep for a player like him. Two horse race, two leg final. Big challenge is that they've got to go away for the second leg, and then Dortmund, that just imposing home crowd. If they can get a bit of a head of steam up and get a lead against PSG, then surely they're a chance of, as Derek suggested, sort of pinching that one.
Well, PSG has been the perennial disappointment in the Champions League, so they'd have to consider themselves a big chance. I'm with Derek. I think it's wide open, but if I had to choose a favourite to take it out, it'd be Real Madrid.
Geez, you've really gone out on a limb there, haven't you, Edge?
Absolutely.
14 titles, I think, last time I accounted for that. All right, well, we're saying that Real get through, and I'm going to go for the underdog, Dortmund to beat PSG and have an epic final on the 2nd of June at, of all places, Wembley, with no Premier League side in that final. Okay, guys, let's wrap it up there. If you've enjoyed the show, make sure you tune in later in the week. We're going to have an extended conversation with Henry Winter. He's recently left the Times after an outstanding career across significant English publications, and he's pioneering, as we know, Substack with the likes of Jamie Jackson from The Guardian, who we have on as a regular guest, and our very own Joey Lynch. So we'll talk more about that, and we'll get a bit of a deep dive going into the crescendo of the Premier League. So, Derek, I'm going to be in the chair with you for that. We'll talk then.
Thanks, Rob. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Edge, thank you, mate.
Thank you, Rob. And thanks, Derek. And listeners, I hope you enjoy the show.
Thanks. Thank you. And to our good mate, Adam Maloney, who's stitching this together as seamlessly as anyone does in the world of podcasting. Thank you for doing everything you've done. Please subscribe to Box to Box if you haven't already. And if you can, give us a lovely little 5-star review. It does help us go up the ratings, stoppage time, offside, wherever you get your podcast. Tweet us at Box to Box NTS and follow us on X. And make sure you like us on Facebook as well. And join us throughout the week as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the world game.